This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's a Fresh Air tradition this time of year to invite our film critic and rock critic to talk about their 10 best lists. Let's start with our film critic, David Edelstein, who also has some thoughts about the new movies opening for the holidays. David is the film critic for the online magazine Slate. David, happy holidays. Good to talk with you again.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with holiday movies. What type of movies tend to get released around the holidays?
Well, normally they're the movies that, in contrast to, say, the summer movies, are the ones that the studios think have a chance to win big awards for the directors and the actors. This year, it's funny, just one after another, even the ones you think are going to be fun are grim. You've got, you know, all sorts of themes of madness and obsession and genocide and euthanasia and you know, even the ones that you know, start out as comedies or as sports movies have kind of tragic deaths in the middle of it. I don't know what it is.
Well, why don't we start with Martin Scorsese's movie, The Aviator, which is about Howard Hughes. What'd you think?
Well, you know, I have a problem in general with biopics. I tend to think those movies are very spread out and they're full of cliches. But the amazing thing about The Aviator is it's 3 hours. It covers a guy who was a lot of things. He was a daring pilot. He was a kind of hard-charging capitalist. He was an innovator. He was a romancer of gorgeous Hollywood stars. He was a target of congressional investigations. He was an obsessive-compulsive germaphobe who, as we all know, went mad. And this movie is absolutely seamless. It all fits together. The guy fits together. The movie fits together. Scorsese and his genius editor, Thelma Schoonmaker, and for that matter, John Logan, who wrote the script, they are just absolute wizards of transitions. And it's just pure pleasure. It's 3 hours of pure pleasure. It's very buoyant. And at the same time, you know, it gives you a lot to chew over when it's over. And Leo DiCaprio is, well, I think he's a really wonderful actor. He's maybe a little lightweight for Howard Hughes, but he gets the drive. He gets the momentum of the part. And I just want to mention a performance by Cate Blanchett as Katharine Hepburn that is so delightful. She made me see Hepburn with new eyes. She's very jaunty. And she's incredibly high-strung at the same time. And I never realized that really defines Katharine Hepburn. It's one of those caricatures that makes you appreciate the real thing.
I've been looking forward to seeing Wes Anderson's movie, The Life Aquatic. I loved his previous film. What did you think of the new one?
Well, this is a disclaimer. I'm not someone who gets down on his knees to young Wes. But this is an attempt to get at, to use his sort of precious style to get at some really big themes about the dream life of the artist and his relationship to the real world. And I really admire the ambition, the reach of this movie, not to mention that it's just it's a gorgeous kind of unabashedly silly toy box of a movie with beautiful colors and with frames that make you laugh out loud. It is a mess. I still think Anderson often upstages his actors with his amazing designs, and I think it's a mistake to go tragic and bring in real violence and death, although I admit that that's one of the themes of the movie.
Now, the new film, Spanglish, was directed by James Brooks, who's given us a lot of good things. Why don't you run through some of the James Brooks things?
I don't know. Terms of Endearment kind of made my head hurt.
Oh, that wasn't on my list of the good things.
Oh, okay. And As Good as It Gets, I thought, was emotional pornography, you know, with the kid, the sick kid, and the gay guy getting beaten up, and I don't know. I actually am not. I'm a huge fan of his TV work, but I loved Spanglish. In contrast to the Scorsese, which I said was sort of miraculously fluid, this movie is very shapeless. It's longish. Spanglish is longish, but it's really about something. It takes off from the language and the class divide between this Mexican maid who doesn't speak any English, at least at the beginning, and a very wealthy Beverly Hills family in which the mother, who's played by Taya Leone in just a terrifically funny performance. The mother is a proud liberal, but she's also a kind of neurotic basket case who patronizes this maid and who, in a very intriguing twist, virtually adopts the maid's daughter and buys her clothes and sets her on her way as a successful American to the point where it really becomes a threat to the maid. There's a lot wrong with this film. There's a lot of little things that kind of niggle at you, and it's a little disconcerting that the actress who plays the maid, she's a Spanish actress named Paz Vega, she's just so jaw-droppingly beautiful that even the characters in the movie commented. And I saw this movie at a sneak preview, you know, with real people, and in some shots, members of the audience literally gasped at her beauty. And I suppose that sort of lifts it into the realm of fairy tale when a lot of it feels very real. But I love the feel of the movie, and there are so many moments of discovery in it. I really hope it doesn't bomb.
Clint Eastwood has a new movie, Million Dollar Baby, that he directed and stars in, and it's only opening in a couple of cities like New York and L.A. I guess that's for Academy Award consideration, and apparently it will be considered because some critics are already talking about it as the best film of the year.
He is beloved among certain critics, who have compared him to Hemingway and, God help us, Shakespeare, and think he's, you know, the sort of major living American director. I feel a little naughty saying that this is an extremely crude and obvious melodrama dressed up in kind of moody is his signature, moody art house clothes. It starts out as a cliched but soft-pedaled go-for-it boxing movie with this gruff coach played by Eastwood and the plucky young upstart played by Hilary Swank. And then it sucker punches you with pure tragedy. But as usual with Eastwood, I think the fatalism is laid on with a trowel, and the handling of some of the supporting characters is just unbelievably crude. It's a great mystery to me why critics are labeling this movie the best of the year.
My guest is David Edelstein. We're talking about some of the films opening for the holidays, and in just a few minutes we'll also hear his 10 best lists and review the year in film. One of the movies opening for the holidays is Phantom of the Opera. You've seen it. How is it?
Maybe the single most excruciating 2.5 hours I have ever spent in a theater. I would have left after 20 minutes if Fresh Air weren't paying me the big bucks. I know some people adore Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's one of the great mysteries of existence. I think the melodies are awful when they're not just downright derivative, and even the good ones are never developed. And the movie itself is just, puts those melodies kind of on a pedestal. And I'm sorry, it's just schlock. I mean, it's oppressively static because the tunes are so repetitive and the lyrics are so simple-minded. When I was watching it, it really made me appreciate how the great operas work as drama. They're actually very sophisticated dramas. This one's not. As a movie, it's upsetting. You know, when I was a kid, I bought this Super 8 Black Hawk Films copy of the entire Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera, and it's great. You know, in the end, the heroes go through this passageway, and they meet one obstacle after another, and they end up in torture chambers and drowning and up on hooks, and it's you think that a movie of this could be so cinematic, but Andrew Lloyd Webber is so damn wedded to every syllable of his musical. You know, none of this is in the movie. It's just, as I said, it's just very static.
Well, when we started, you said that this holiday season of movies is largely about subjects very grim, including genocide, which leads us to the final movie on the holiday movie list, which is Hotel Rwanda.
Hotel Rwanda.
Yeah. So, does the movie work in trying to describe, I don't know how descriptive it is of the genocide. I know it's about a hotel owner who gives shelter to a lot of people in his hotel.
Well, it can't show you the entire scope of the Rwandan genocide, which, as we know, killed close to 1 million people. It's not a great movie, but I think it is an important one. It has a great performance by Don Cheadle as this obsequious, almost westernized Hutu hotel manager who shelters the Tutsis, including his wife, in this kind of Western luxury hotel. And for the entire movie, he has to negotiate constantly to keep them from being taken out and shot. And along the way, he has to run and get food, and he has to run and try to enlist the help of various corrupt generals and kind of helpless diplomats. And, you know, he passes the piles of bodies, the women and the children, just sort of hacked down with machetes. And you know, we all heard about the Rwandan genocide, but it's kind of important to have a movie that actually puts those images on the screen. I hate to say it.
My guest is Fresh Air film critic David Edelstein. We'll talk about his list of the best movies of the year after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is David Edelstein, Fresh Air's film critic. One of my favorite parts of the end of the year is seeing everybody's 10 best list. David, you've brought your 10 best films of the year list. So this is the dramatic part.
Well, can I preface it?
Yes.
Can I preface it?
Yes.
Can I add yet another disclaimer? In making my 10 best list this year, I really only came up with 7 movies that I absolutely could say these are the best of the year, and then sort of a long list of movies that I also want you to see. You know, a good 10 best list has one blockbuster, you know, to prove that you're not out of sync with the mass audience. And it really should have one film that nobody's ever heard of to prove you're superior to the mass audience. So it's an art form in and of itself. So here goes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, number one, by a wide margin, is Charlie Kaufman and Michel Gondry's masterpiece, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Number two, Alexander Payne's comedy, Sideways. Number three is kind of a tie between Hero and House of Flying Daggers. They're two Zhang Yimou martial arts masterpieces. A reader of mine calls this the martial artsy genre. Number four, Pedro Almodovar's Bad Education, which is his third, I think, great film in a row. Number five, Brad Bird's The Incredibles, which lives up to its name. And number six, Jonathan Coet's home movie essay on his family's and his own madness, Tarnation. My other favorites this year, in no order.
Wait, you said there were 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hero and House of Flying Daggers.
Oh, that's 2. Yes, that's right.
I cheat. You know, I cheat. So now I can put in 4 more.
Okay.
And among them would be Spanglish, as I mentioned, The Aviator, which I talked about, the two wonderful rock documentaries, Metallica, Some Kind of Monster, and End of the Century about the Ramones, a Hong Kong thriller, Infernal Affairs, and a Taiwanese tone poem. This is the obscure one, set in a dying movie house, called Goodbye Dragon Inn. There are also 2 movies about women compelled to commit acts of heroism. Mulade, which is Ousmane Sembe's anti-female circumcision drama, and Vera Drake, which is Mike Leigh's drama of an English cleaning woman who moonlights as an abortionist. And I wanted to add that I initially was somewhat skeptical about that film, but the longer it sits with me, the more I respect Leigh's work and the work of Imelda Staunton, who plays Vera.
Do you feel like the vote for best documentary is that any of the votes for instance the Academy Awards are going to be very politically divisive? You know, will The Passion of the Christ win awards? Will Michael Moore's movie win awards? You know, because some of the films have become so politically charged.
Boy, I find it even hard to open my mouth on The Passion of the Christ. I got so much hate mail for calling it the Jesus Chainsaw Massacre on this very program. Fahrenheit and Passion really highlight our cultural schism. And I don't know. I mean, they might do so out of fear of the reaction from the country if they don't. I know that already certain talk show hosts have begun to fan this flame to say if The Passion of the Christ is not nominated for Best Picture, it will be proof that Hollywood is out of touch with America. In terms of Passion of the Christ and Fahrenheit 9/11, I suppose there might be someone somewhere who loves them both. But in general, I don't think either side will ever see the other's point of view. Each film is, in its single-mindedness, extremely punishing. And yet, for its intended audience, it's sort of a turn-on. I mean, every bloody lash and gouge in Mel Gibson's Jesus movie is transfiguring for its audience. For them, it can't be too bloody. It can't be too horrific. Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, you know, it gives no inkling of Saddam Hussein's brutality or the real peril of what some call Islamofascism. But Moore has a real and very well-developed view of the United States as run by kind of corporatist greed heads who hide their motives behind bogus piety, and he lays it out for us, and it's in the service of attacking a war he really believes is waged by arrogant fools, and you know, this was extremely gratifying to many people who have been hungering for something this strong against this particular administration.
You know, a lot of conservative people have criticized Hollywood for being left-leaning. For the people who you know in the film industry or in the movie criticism business, for those who are, in fact, leaning more to the left than to the right, do you think that they're upset at being at Hollywood being criticized for being liberal?
Sure they do, because most of the time they don't perceive themselves as peddling anything other than secular humanist values. Really, it's only been, I think, in the last 20 years that secular humanist values have been portrayed as, ultra-liberal. I think Hollywood's politics mostly revolve around what's going to manipulate an audience. I had an epiphany about 15 years ago when, within a couple of weeks, the movies Field of Dreams and Dead Poets Society were released. They're movies really coming from kind of opposite ends of the political and cultural spectrum. One of them is about a guy who rejected his dad during the counterculture, and as a result, because his dad was a reactionary conservative, and as a result, there's this great void in his life. And it's about the importance of kind of reconciling yourself to your dad and kind of embracing his values. And the dad comes back as a baseball player, and they have this wonderful reunion, ghostly reunion on a baseball field. And then a week later, Dead Poets Society came out, and it was a classic counterculture movie about daddies who kill. Kind of setting the stage for the counterculture, for defeating the daddies who drive sensitive young men to commit suicide. Now, the same critics who loved one movie loved them both, and I realized they didn't really have much different politics. Their politics were all about jerking an audience around. The people who make vigilante movies, probably a lot of them are against capital punishment and even vote Democrat. But they know vigilante movies really turn on an audience. They get you sort of hungering for the bad guy's blood, and they give you a kind of orgasmic payoff at the end. So I think a lot of Hollywood's politics are completely opportunistic.
David, for anyone who's going to have time to get to just one movie over the holidays, is there any particular movie you'd recommend?
Can I give you two?
Yes.
Okay. I would say Alexander Payne's Sideways, which is about two men on a wine tasting trip. It's a marvelous portrait of both addiction and Pinot Noir. And also, of course, House of Flying Daggers, which is just the damnedest thing. It's the most gorgeous martial arts film you'll ever see, worthy of being ranked with the great dance musicals.
Well, David, happy holidays. Thank you so much for talking about movies with us.
Thank you very much. And remember, if the gloom and doom of the holiday season gets to you, rent The Lady Eve or The Shop Around the Corner.
David Edelstein is the film critic for Fresh Air and the online magazine Slate. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.